District Sentinel Radio here. This is your nightly newscast featuring reporting from the left. I'm Sam Sachs.
I'm Sam Knight.
We are in the Harper is a Good Girl studios in Washington, D.C. Check out the website, districtsentinel.com. Check out the polling.
Yeah, Labor is down by three, folks. Labor is down by three. Unthinkable just weeks earlier.
Sam skipped into the radio studio after seeing this.
Yeah, I'm trying not to get too excited because, you know, hopes can only be dashed usually. But it does look like that boy, he is about to do it. Jeremy Corbyn could soon be the right honorable Jeremy Corbyn. Unbelievable.
It would be unbelievable. Storms appear to be gathering outside. There was just a crash of thunder right before I hit the record button. So you might be hearing some rain, some lightning and thunder during this podcast. Also, you might have heard a lot of loud noises, basically just a cat meowing and then me getting up and opening a door to let the cat in when we were recording our interview with Michael Siebert about Montana politics. It was a good interview.
I learned a lot.
And that's available for our Patreon subscribers over at patreon.com/districtsentinel.
Yeah, check it out. Great interview with Michael, and you'll get to hear some noises from Olive, the cat who lives in this house, who is also a good girl.
Yeah, I haven't caught Olive in the studio.
No, I think she's roamed around here, but she's pretty shy. You know,
she probably sniffed out Harper, who has been in the studio.
Harper definitely has been in the studio. Harper is much less shy than Olive, who is also a good girl. Olive is a good girl. She's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
But she won't give me the time of day.
Yeah.
I'm trying to feed her more cat treats.
That's kind of how cats operate, to be honest.
Well, you got to feed them cat treats, and then they warm up to you.
For new time listeners, we don't always talk about animals like this and pets, though if you like that sort of stuff, we kind of do. shameless. Also, we offer naming rights to our studio. And currently, there is someone who has put up money, an unnamed donor, who's paid for naming rights for the next 2 months. And it's called the Harper is a Good Girl Studios, Harper being Sam Knight's parents' dog. Not to dox anybody too much, but I think you've doxed yourself on that enough.
Yeah, no, she's my parents' dog.
All right. It's Wednesday, May 31st, 2017. Here's the news. As we called it on yesterday's show, upon news that Trump was meeting with his EPA chief, Scott Pruitt, about what to do with the Paris Climate Agreement, there are now reports that Trump will indeed withdraw the U.S. from the deal. It hasn't been confirmed yet by the White House, but sources are telling multiple outlets that that's the direction Trump is going in, withdrawing the U.S. from the accord. The U.S. would then join Syria and Nicaragua as the only countries not participating in the sweeping plan to save the planet. The U.S. is the second largest emitter of greenhouse gases behind China, which is abiding by the accord. So without U.S. participation, any carbon reduction goals will be seriously hampered, and the world will be fine, but humanity will suffer, and other living creatures, I suppose. There is a chance Trump might still change his mind since this isn't official yet, or maybe come up with some plan in which the U.S. is still in the agreement by name only, considering the agreement isn't really enforceable and it depends on self-grading. Trump just gives the country an A. We're doing great, even though we're not doing anything. But this is the same idiot who said that global warming was a hoax by the Chinese. So I'm not holding my breath that he's going to stay in the agreement, though I will be holding my breath once we're all underwater.
Yeah, it's grim news, grim. Like the Paris Climate Accord, like you mentioned, it's not exactly the best deal, but it was a step in the right direction.
Yeah. The only plan on the table right now, at least.
You go to war with the climate agreement you have, not the climate agreement you want or would like to have.
Thanks, General.
Please, Secretary.
Yes.
Secretary Rumsfeld. In other news with global import, a massive bomb was detonated earlier today in Kabul. The explosion ripped through the diplomatic quarter of the Afghan capital, killing at least 80 people and wounding another 460. Though the attack occurred around many embassies, there were no reports of foreigners among casualties. That's according to the Washington Post. The Afghan Taliban denied responsibility. No word yet from the affiliate of the Islamic State in Afghanistan, a group that is most active near the Pakistan-Afghan frontier in Nangarhar province. Now, some news that requires a bit of a setup, so bear with me for a second here. About 2 weeks ago, on May 18th, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin appeared before the Senate Banking Committee. Sherrod Brown, the top Dim on the committee, asked about an inquiry he had sent on March 2nd. It was a letter requesting details about Trump business ties abroad and how they might conflict with the application of federal laws, specifically the laws that Mnuchin has been tasked with enforcing. Take a listen.
Well, you get a complete list of Trump business associates and financial ties to ensure that any foreign entanglements are benign with respect to the laws you enforce, terrorism, money laundering, sanctions, CFIUS, IRGC associations, and the like.
Mnuchin seemed to agree to cooperate with this request in principle. Here was part of his response to Brown.
Again, if you just send me a note on what you're looking for, we will review internally whether it's appropriate to come from us or somewhere else, and we're happy to be responsive to.
So anyway, Brown sent Mnuchin a note after the hearing, or should I say another note, because he had already sent one 2 months before the hearing. And surprise, surprise, Brown didn't get the information he requested. Mm. So yesterday, Brown told Mnuchin in another letter that the secretary's staff failed to offer details about Trump's business associates. Here was the meat of the reply, according to the senator. Quote, "Your staff person's one-paragraph response, noting that CFIUS has a conflict of interest policy, altogether missed the point of my inquiry. CFIUS stands for the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, a multi-agency body that was established during the Cold War to examine the policy implications of foreign ownership of American assets." So no answer from Mnuchin, who as Treasury Secretary is chair of CFIUS. And by the way, Brown pointed this out during the May 18th hearing. That morning, the same morning, The Wall Street Journal revealed ties between Trump and the Russian financial institution Vinesh Ekonombank, the sanctioned Russian bank chaired by Sergei Gorkov, the guy who was eventually revealed as the guy that Jared Kushner met in December, allegedly to set up a back channel between the White House and the Kremlin. Now, I'm not trying to overload you with details or go all Rachel Maddow on you here. The point is that we should know who has ties to Trump, considering he has refused to divest himself from his businesses, and considering Trump oversees agencies that enforce laws and rules impacting his associates abroad. If Mnuchin even knows who these Trump associates are, he isn't saying, nor is he revealing them to committees of jurisdiction. Again, I hate to sound like some MSNBC dipshit since America was bad and corrupt before Trump, but this is not normal.
Set your TiVos to C-SPAN next week, folks. James Comey is going to testify in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee. The fired FBI director has reportedly cleared the upcoming testimony with the new special prosecutor heading up the Russia probe, Robert Mueller. That's to make sure any information Comey provides to Congress doesn't impede the current DOJ probe. Now, you can bet Comey will probably give the same answers he's given the committee during previous appearances when asked about the Russia probe, that he won't comment on ongoing investigations. But I'm sure he will comment on his interactions with the president, in particular the nature of his memos, the ones he wrote documenting those interactions, information that could implicate the president in abuse of power or obstruction of justice. Though what Comey might not say could be interesting too. He'll be asked about the memos, and if he declines to provide information citing an ongoing investigation, then it could suggest the Russia probe now includes Trump's actions in trying to derail it. Check in with the District Sentinel next week for coverage. Meanwhile, on the House side, the House Intelligence Committee issued 7 subpoenas today, 4 related to its own Russia probe, 3 related to its investigation into unauthorized leaks.
It's easy to forget about the unauthorized leak aspect of the probe, but that could really derail reauthorization of surveillance authorities. FISA 702 is what I'm thinking of. That's really something to...
We can only hope.
Yeah, we can only hope. And speaking of Russia, in a reminder of why it wasn't Russia's fault that Hillary lost, the former Democratic presidential candidate spoke today at the Code Conference in Rancho Palos Verdes, California.
Clinton made everyone mad.
She did. She took aim at the Democratic National Committee. Here's what she said, quote, "So I'm now the nominee of the Democratic Party. I inherit nothing from the Democratic Party. I mean, it was bankrupt. It was on the verge of insolvency. Its data was mediocre to poor, non-existent, wrong. I had to inject money into it." Wasn't this the same insanely electable Hillary campaign that was supposed to be a data and money machine? Isn't this the same Hillary Clinton that was ready to run years before the primary even started? Is it? Am I just fucking tripping here? Am I on some sort of fucking crazy drug that makes me see? Anyway.
I just looked at it. It is indeed the same Hillary Clinton.
God, what an embarrassment. At least this should sour some centrist Dems to Hillary, who obviously only gives a shit about herself at this point, as if it wasn't obvious before. Clinton also said this about Donald Trump's complete joke of a campaign, by the way, that it had, quote, tried and true effective foundation in the form of the Republican machine, and that said machine was guided by Russian masterminds. She said, quote, "The Russians, in my opinion, and based on the intel and counter-intel people I've talked to, could not have known how to best weaponize that information unless they had been guided by Americans and guided by people who had polling and data information." Are you
She's going full on Louise Mensch.
She's going full Louise Mensch. I mean, Trump was in Minnesota. Sorry.
All right. Do you think Hillary has slid into Louise Mensch's DMs?
I would not put it past her. I think that's a high possibility. But let me go back here to what she was saying about Trump being at the head of some mastermind campaign. He was in Minnesota on the last day of the race trying to whip up hatred against Somalis. He lost the state by 1.5%. Did the Russian Republican machine tell Trump to have a joke of a campaign with no ground game based entirely on his knee-jerk hatred that sent him to Minnesota on the last day of the campaign?
Remember when the Trump campaign or some, maybe it was like the Trump TV operation went behind the scenes of like, and it was just a bunch of like bros talking about sports and watching Fox News. Like they had no idea what was going on.
They were getting ready to set up Trump's media operation.
Yeah.
Trump wanted to be the guy who just sat there and ranted about President Hillary.
Yes.
As is becoming clearly obvious by his anyway, back to this idea of this Russia Republican fucking conspiracy. Did it also force Hillary to ignore Wisconsin? Did it force her to turn away SEIU volunteers from Michigan? Did Putin use a psyop to make Clinton morons claim that Arizona, Texas, and Georgia were in play? Of course they didn't. No one would be talking about, quote, weaponized information if Hillary wasn't completely fucking arrogant and incompetent. And by the way, she also talked about her email server. She said the New York Times reported it like it was Pearl Harbor, her words, not mine. She also said she didn't break any rules by doing it. There are like so many fucking public records rules against this sort of thing.
And she probably violated like Federal Records Act. She probably broke the fucking law on it, but I'm not, you know, a lawyer or anything. But if you had a really aggressive prosecutor and if it was some low-level employee who was doing shit like this, hiding government records, they definitely would have threatened to use that law against them to force them to plead out or something.
I mean, it was obvious when the Post reported this way early in the campaign, which is that Petraeus didn't go to jail for leaking like code word style information to his lover Paula Broadwell, and that set the precedent there as to why no one thought Hillary would go to jail or just get charged with anything. You know, it's just ridiculous. It's insane.
Yeah, I was even watching MSNBC and Ruth Marcus, who, goddamn, I forgot her bad tweet a few months ago. But whatever. Ruth Marcus basically owned Hillary when Hillary said that misogyny was the reason she got so much grief for the Wall Street speeches. And she's like, men gave these speeches and they got paid too. And it's like, no, you were running for president.
I mean, Romney gave paid speeches to Wall Street and he was dragged by Democrats and rightfully fucking so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, to close things out.
But her speeches consisted of her going to Wall Street and saying, knock it off.
I want to die. To close things out here, at some point in her speech today, Clinton also said, quote, I take responsibility for every decision I made, but that's not why I lost. Unbelievable. Words mean nothing.
I can't wait for Hillary Clinton's run in 2020. All right, let's check out that listener rant line.
Hey Sims, it's me, Jared. I'm Downingtown, PA. I was over Memorial Day, I was thinking about all these wars that have been raging on. It just struck to me, if you take into account World War II, the Cold War that started right after World War II, and the War on Terror that was started under Reagan, actually, in 1981, I think he declared it, and it was redeclared by George W. Bush in 2001. America hasn't known peace since 1941. And, in fact, my grandfather told me, like, a little story about what it was like just before Pearl Harbor, when he was stationed in California and joined the Marines, and FDR called all that. And just what does the psyche of being in almost an endless war, what do you think that does to our population? Because, I mean, all I've known my whole life is literally war. I mean, I was 9 years old when 9/11 happened, and I watched it in school. I was probably in communion or being an altar boy at my Lutheran church when the Iraq War started. So I pretty much know war my whole life. And do you think, to a certain extent, it's been sort of normalized now with Obama, that it wasn't under Bush? I don't know. But I don't see the same kind of anti-war effort I see under Trump as I did under Bush. All right, thanks. See you guys there.
Interesting call. I don't know. I mean, people who have studied this much more than I can probably give a better opinion on what it does to a country's psyche to be at war constantly for so long. But I do know it makes a lot of people a lot of fucking money. And you can go into the counties that are the wealthiest counties in America, just across the Potomac, just outside Washington, D.C.
Northern Virginia.
Northern Virginia. And you just see giant castles built by defense contractors and the money that has been made off perpetual warfare.
I think with regards to the psyche, just going to take a quick stab at this. I think you see it in terms of the constant veneration of the office of the president, because the president is the commander in chief. You're not supposed to criticize him when he's abroad. You're not supposed to criticize him when you're abroad.
What are you, Nancy Pelosi?
Yeah, exactly. And there's just so much power concentrated in the office of the president, who, like I said, is the commander in chief. He's the guy who calls the shots, orders the military around. With regards to Bush, though, I think there was a flare-up in anti-war activity because, yes, while we have been at war basically nonstop since 1941, it's not always high intensity. It's not always shock and awe.
Yeah.
A lot of it is more police action, low intensity, or bombing campaigns where American troops are not directly involved, which it sucks that Americans don't care as much about that when it's just foreigners dying. That's really depressing. But yeah, I think those are the sort of answers to the questions there.
Yeah. Good call. Good point.
Good call. Good point. Yeah.
Let's check out another caller.
Hey, Sam. It's John, one of your listeners from abroad. Just calling to see if you could settle up a matter of urgent importance. At this point, we've all seen the president's tweet that he sent presumably from the White House bathroom when his phone fell into the toilet as he was bemoaning negative press something. And now a desperate nation, nay, a desperate world, looks to the Sentinel Boys to figure out what the definitive pronunciation of his next word is. Covfefe? Covbeef? I'm not sure, but, maybe you guys do. And again, whatever you decide, that's how it's pronounced. So pick something before the joke is well and truly dead. Thanks.
You want to take a stab at it?
Maybe we should try it at the same time. 1, 2, 3.
Covfefe. Ooh, you did. You went with the long E at the end there.
Actually, I was going to go with covfefe.
Covfefe. I like covfefe, I guess, when it comes down to it. I ranted about this earlier at Sam because it pissed me off. And I don't even know what to think of it because it did dominate the news. I mean, it was brought up at the fucking White House press briefing. And I'm like, what kind of idiot reporter brings this up at the White House press briefing? And then Sean Spicer gives the most ridiculous answer possible to that question. I'll just play it.
Do you think people should be concerned that the president posted somewhat of an incoherent tweet last night and that it then stayed up for hours?
No.
Why did it stay up so long? Is no one watching this?
No, I think the president and a small group of people know exactly what he meant. Blake.
Wait a minute.
Blake.
What does it mean?
Blake.
Like, giving that answer to the question just makes this a story now suddenly. Like, I guess Hillary Clinton made a joke that it was a code word for the Russians. But, like, why is the White House incapable of explaining what a typo in a tweet?
Because the real story here is that Trump's brain is rotting quite rapidly, I would say. I don't care who you are, what your politics are. If you aren't suffering from some kind of brain rot, you don't send a fucked up tweet like that and then just leave it up for 6 hours. It just doesn't make sense to me. Talking as a guy who's done a lot of typos here tweets.
Same.
You know, I will delete it immediately or at least just be like, I don't know. Trump's a poster.
He is a poster. He never logs off.
It's just complete evidence of his brain resembling porridge.
I'd say just to give deference to the people who believe that Trump is a mastermind and everything he's doing is playing 12-dimensional chess like all presidents, including Obama, he did a fucking typo, realized all the attention it was getting, left it up to just fuck with people, realized that it would play the news cycle for an entire day, and it's better than anything else that he's been getting, any other attention he's been receiving.
I don't think he knew. I don't think he was, like, conscious of
that
the attentions.
Up?
Yeah, he like, half-tweeted it.
You don't think he rolls
through
his Menchies?
No, I think he half-tweeted it, lost his attention span, went off the rails, and then he just went back to sleep.
So he half-tweeted it, wiped, and went back to sleep.
Yeah. He toilet-tweeted, put his phone down, then just went into his bed and just passed out again, completely forgetting about it. He can't keep, object permanence does not really exist for him. He can't really keep his focus for more than 30 seconds. His brain is just complete mush.
All right, I've got news for you. That's the show today. We've run long today. Hope you had an extra large load of dishes from hosting people Memorial Day weekend. Reminder, if you're seeking advice, we debuted a new segment on the Sentinel Cast last week, Advice and Consent with Rachel Curzius. Email us questions, adviceandconsent@districtsentinel.com, or you can always call the listener rant line at 202-684-6108. Sponsors of the show include the Congressional Dish podcast hosted by Jennifer Briney. Check it out at congressionaldish.com. Another sponsor, levelnews.org. Listen to this episode and all other episodes of our nightly newscast by going to districtsentinel.com. If you haven't yet, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud by searching for District Sentinel Radio. We're also on TuneIn and Stitcher. Leave a review, give us a rating, tell your friends to listen. We're back tomorrow. We're in DC, so you don't have to be.